Live from the capital of Raider Nation, Las Vegas, Nevada. It's Silver and Black Today, your daily dose of all things Las Vegas Raiders football. News, views, guests, and your phone calls are all part of the game plan. There's only one nation, and it listens here. Now your host, Scott Gulbranson.
Welcome back. The Thursday edition of Silver and Black Today. Scott Gulbranson with you, along with my co-host, Q Myers. Always brought to you by our good friends, Sam and Ash Injury Attorneys, 702-820-1234, because you deserve what is right. Man, it is an interesting day in America. Of course, the events of yesterday outside the realm of sports, Q, were wild. I did not watch much news, man. I've had enough over the last course of the year, and I'm like, I don't even want to know what's going on.
Yeah, it was a lot of wild and craziness and stuff I honestly, you know, never thought that I would ever see. And, you know, it's funny just thinking about that, you know, things that we witnessed and saw. It's kind of, like I said, it's so super unbelievable. And that doesn't matter what side of the fence you're on. It doesn't really matter. It's just, I think everyone can agree that what we saw on Wednesday is something that nobody ever thought we'd see, you know, on the nation's capital.
No, and it's interesting, you know, those of us in the media, especially the sports media, there's a lot of people who feel very comfortable of being very open with their beliefs and all that and sharing that, especially in social media. And that's where I was getting my news from yesterday, because I have not watched the news since before the election. I've just checked out of that machine. I find it too divisive. I don't care, like you said, I don't care what side you're on. I just like I got enough going on in my life that I don't necessarily need that. I get my news, I usually read it. But nonetheless, there's a lot of our brethren in the sports media who speak out their mind. It's their right. Their right as an American, freedom of speech and all that stuff. But man, it's amazing to watch the anger and the fighting that goes back. And a lot of the folks who are, hey, you talk about sports, shut up and just talk about sports, which I don't think is acceptable. We're all Americans. We all have the opportunity to speak out. Some of us choose to do it publicly. Others of us choose to do it differently. But it's a very strange time, Q, because I see it like days like yesterday where it really just crashes head first with the sports world and with the sports media.
Yeah, it's really it's a fine line, you know, and like you said, some people go all the way in and then some people just kind of take the approach that I take and just say, hey, man, like that's just a lot of craziness going on and everyone be safe. And, you know, I think that when people start getting injured and people start getting killed and stuff like that, I mean, that's, I don't think anyone, no matter who you're pulling for, you're behind, I don't think anyone wants to see anything like that. And so really funny, man, that, you know, on the podcast today, before I even got into it, I was just like, hey, you know, for the next 35, 40 minutes, whatever it is, you know, this is kind of like a relief, you know, just a relief of, you know, yeah, of getting away from what's going on. And I had people come at me like, hey, you're picking a side and it's only 50% that feel like this is negative and 50% feel like it's positive. So don't choose a side, just stick to sports. And I'm like, I absolutely did stick to sports and I didn't choose a side and you're still getting mad at me. So yeah, I'm telling you, man, it is one of those things that is so, it's such a hot button that regardless what you say about it, there's always going to be someone who's just, you know, they're going to hear what they want to hear it the way they want to hear it, and they're going to be ready to fire up. And it's just crazy times that we're living in. And so that's why it's a blessing to be able to come on the radio and talk some sports and just kind of get away from it all for a couple hours.
Yeah, and I think it, for me, in closing on this one, I think that that's part of the reason why you see some folks who don't like, I'm not defending them, because, you know, you don't have to read people, you don't have to follow people, but I think that for some folks, the expression of, hey, I go to listen to sports radio or to podcasts, or I follow a writer on Twitter, for example, because I'm trying to get away from that. I just want to know about sports. But remember, you know, when you're following somebody, especially in social media, you know, that's the person's voice. That's not, they're just, now some people do use social media Q just for professional stuff, and it's, you don't see any personal stuff, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that approach either. Right. But if you follow somebody who's been open about this, and then it comes back and it's something you agree with or don't disagree with, you know, you choose who to follow. And it's just unfortunate, because look, there's plenty of people I agree or disagree with that I know that are part of this media operation, this media landscape. Folks I know that we've worked, you and I, side by side with, I don't agree with them on everything, but I don't also get nuts and throw them out with the bathwater because I don't like their personal view. They have the right to express their view. Doesn't mean I have to agree with it. Doesn't mean I have to argue with them. So I'm hoping that, you know, as we move forward, we were hoping that 2021 would be different than 2020. But already we're only 7 days in, and it's been a little crazy. But we're going to talk about Raiders football today because that's what we're here to do, and move forward with that. And Raider Nation is a diverse group. That's what I love so much about it. There's people from all walks of life, colors, creeds, you name it. They're out there, and they love their Raiders football. Coming up on today's show, we have our normal Thursday guest. Of course, Evan Grote from Just Pod Baby will be with us. We're going to get his kind of 2020 encapsulation of the Raiders season, what he thought also around the DC hire and the names that are out there, as well as some free agent news or free agent targets like Q and I talked about yesterday. Then at 3 o'clock, Levi Edwards from Raiders.com will join us one last time for the season. We're going to talk to him about some honors that came in. Daniel Carlson was named the AFC Special Teams Player of the Month for December. He's had a great year. Of course, he broke Sebastian Janikowski's all-time scoring record for the season with the Raiders this year. So he had a good year. I know that's a mixed bag, Q, because it's great that he got that many field goals, but at the same time, it's not great that he got that many field goals.
Exactly. Right? That meant that they were kicking too many damn field goals.
Exactly. And then we'll talk to Levi, too, about Max Crosby. He was honored as the AFC Special Teams Player of the Week. He was part of those both block field goals in Denver. So we'll talk about that. And also Max Crosby, his year, we just had him on the show on Monday. But we're going to talk to Levi, who wrote a great story up on him on the website. We'll have the Q-tip. And, of course, we'll close out getting the summary of the day's news from Raiders Way with Vinny Bonsignor, of course, who hosts In the Huddle next here from 4 to 6 on Raider Nation Radio. Also, Q, you heard today we have a new member to the team here at Raider Nation Radio from 10 to 12, Rich Eisen. The Rich Eisen Show will now be heard. Obviously, Rich Eisen covers the NFL. He's part of NFL Network. So an exciting addition here to the lineup.
Yeah, Rich Eisen's a good dude, man. He's very knowledgeable when it comes to the NFL. So if the NFL is something that you, you know, that's your big bag. And obviously, if you're listening to Raider Nation Radio, at least the Raiders are your big bag. But NFL, definitely. Rich Eisen has it covered, always has a lot of really good guests on his show as well. So that should be a fun one.
And Q, we talked about up on our website, silverandblacktoday.com. You know, we're hearing a lot about Gus Bradley. You and I talked about him yesterday. I talked about him with Vinny yesterday as well. He's kind of emerged as the leading candidate, at least for now. Things can change. We don't know for sure. But Noah Strang, our writer up on the website, who's going to be with us tomorrow, he wrote a story because Gus Bradley, you know, you can go look at stats and all that, but who is he? What's his journey? And that's up there for folks to read. But it's an interesting journey. I mean, a lot of people I see are like, well, they know him from the Chargers. They know he knows Gruden, but they didn't realize what he did up in Seattle.
Right.
And he hasn't gotten to the same level of success that he had in Seattle. Which is interesting, Q, though, because in Seattle, like you said yesterday on the show, you know, the Legion of Boom and all that, they didn't always have the greatest players, but they somehow put it together. Then he's in Los Angeles with the Chargers. He seems to have better players, and they struggled a little bit there at times. So it's kind of hard to understand what you'd be getting with Gus Bradley.
Well, and think about this, you know, a lot of guys that left Seattle haven't had a lot of success. I mean, think about it. Dan Quinn was in Seattle. He got fired in Atlanta. Gus Bradley was in Jacksonville. He was the head coach there and he got fired eventually, but they had a really good defense at one point, but you know, it just didn't work out as a head coach. A lot of times, man, it's not always great. Oh, there's a guy named Ken Norton Jr. who left Seattle and I think the Raiders are very familiar with him. It didn't really work out. And guess where he's at? He's back in Seattle and he's doing pretty well. You know what I mean? It's like, there's a lot of things about it. Sometimes it's not always a better fit outside of where you're at. And so I think that Gus Bradley, he has some skins on the wall. He does have a good scheme, but you got to have the guys that fit it and he's got to know how to get the most out of them. And that's what they had this, you know, that's why the Legion of Boom was so special, man. In Seattle, they all understood everyone's role. I think Richard Sherman, and you know, you kind of still got me on this Richard Sherman thing, as you mentioned him yesterday. He said something that's always stuck with me, and this is when he was a member of the 49ers. He said, "What makes us so good is everyone understands their role. If you're a wheel, be a wheel. Don't be an engine if you're a wheel. You know, you just can't do it. If you're a bumper, then damn it, be the bumper. You're not a window. I mean, you know, it's just like, and he made it so simple, because that's how you know, cars all have parts, and they have to have their role. You know, a wheel's got to be the wheel. And so that's what Gus Bradley and company and Dan Quinn and company, when they were all in Seattle, they all figured out how each one of those pieces fit and how they built the machine. Well, if Gus Bradley ends up being the guy with the Raiders as a defensive coordinator, he's got to go and find his wheel. He's got to go find his steering wheel. He's got to go find his, the engine. He's got to go find all the pieces and find out how to put them together to make that machine and make that machine go.
Yeah, well said. And it's interesting too, because you start to look at that defense, and we talked yesterday, a player, as you mentioned, Richard Sherman again, and I talked to Vinny, and I know you're gone on the show by that point, but I was talking to Vinny about it yesterday, and I mentioned our conversation about Richard Sherman, and he's like, I love Richard Sherman, I'm a big fan of his, but I don't think so, not here. And I'm like, oh, well then who would you like, Vinny? He said Marcus May from the Jets.
Marcus May is a young dude and can go, yeah, man, but he would be a safety, but he's a hell of a player. Yeah, he's a hell of a player.
Right, but when I mentioned kind of that alpha dog, that guy who's experienced who could come into that young room, and don't get me wrong, Marcus May would be fine at safety. I still think, though, and he agreed that, yeah, a veteran cornerback or veteran safety there would be huge for this team, and that he anticipates they'll go do that. He didn't necessarily think Richard Sherman was the right guy, I disagreed with him. But I do think, though, that you're right about the pieces. You have to get – I think that's the first part that this defensive coordinator's got to come in and do, and I know they have to do Zoom meetings, and hopefully soon they'll be able to meet in person and all that, is they got to get those guys in the room and say, okay, listen – this is your role. This is what I'm going to expect out of you. Either you're on board with that or you're not.
Right.
Because those roles and understanding, to me, that's what I saw on the defense last year, Q, was that all that confusion, the lack of communications. And to me, that says that these guys don't know who's doing what and where you're supposed to be. And that's not just playing on the field with the scheme and the plays. I'm talking about, in general, your role on that defensive unit.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And again, that's goes back to the captain, and whoever's going to be the captain, whoever's going to be the defensive coordinator is going to be that guy. And he's going to have to get that understanding of every player on that defensive side of the ball. Like, this is what you do. This is how you do it. And this is what's expected each and every time out. And so if that's Gus Bradley, then so be it. You know, and if that ends up being Joe Barry, then so be it. If it ends up being someone else, Chris Richard, so be it. They just have to have a blueprint, and they have to be able to relate that blueprint to the players, so they understand it, so they're not confused. So when, you know, Travis Kelce's in the end zone for a game-winning touchdown catch, you don't have Damon Arnett staring across at Jonathan Abram, who's staring across at Trayvon Mullen, who's staring across at Nick Witkowski saying, what happened, with their hands up. You know what I mean? Like, wait a minute. I thought you were here. Who's on first? Who's on third? You know what I mean? It's like, that's how much confusion there was. And I point out that play because I was sitting right next to you in the press box when that play happened. And you can immediately see every single guy on that defensive side of the ball look at the next guy next to him like, was that my bad? Was that your bad? Where was I at? I mean, it was utter chaos.
It really was. It really was. And it's going to be interesting. Vinny said yesterday he believes that they will have this hire in place. Could be as early as the end of this week, which is upon us now, but more likely beginning to mid of next week. So that'll be good. I think that's so important for this team because, you know, especially for those guys on the defense, the guys who will be around, you just want to know, okay, who's our guy?
Yep.
What do I know? You know, get in a meeting with the guys so they understand what the expect. Set that level of expectation. The coaches and the coaching staff does so that they can get go. Because some of the defensive coordinators, you know, depending on the availability of the players, is they have different formats and what they like their guys to do in the offseason too. And then, oh, by the way, yeah, I got a new scheme for you. Here's the book. You got to study it, right? So there's a lot to go, and the earlier the Raiders can get a start on that, the better. Q, you want to? The one thing I want to talk about today with you too, in this opening segment, is about the Raiders offensive line, because the Raiders offensive line, again, did a great job this year at times, still one of the top rated units, despite all those injuries, despite the lack of availability of a lot of those guys throughout the season. They still did pretty good. We saw a lowering in production for run blocking, clearly for Josh Jacobs. I think part of his issue was that he wasn't getting the same kind of holes he did last year up front. And of course, you know, you had the Trent Brown situation. You had, of course, Richie Incognito and the injury, he wasn't really there most of the season. And so I'm looking at this offensive line, and yes, one of the quote-unquote best in the league, Q, but I'm starting to get concerned because I think that this offense and this team are in a position where they're about to make that move that you're going to move, where you have a 2 to 3 year period where you make a run and you have the opportunity to perhaps go compete for a championship. And the offense is there with every other piece, but that offensive line, I'm concerned about some age there. I'm concerned about what they're going to do with Trent Brown. I'm concerned about the durability, and even though he's been a good player, of Gabe Jackson. And then I'm concerned about Colton Miller, who had a very good year, don't get me wrong, but is still struggling with run blocking. He's much better in pass blocking, of course. And so I'm looking at that offensive line, and I'm not saying it's a high priority right now, but I'm starting to think, Hugh, it's moving up on the list.
I mean, yeah, and I think that you always need to make sure that you have the offensive linemen and you have a little bit of depth at that position, as you saw how much the Raiders needed depth this past season at on the offensive line with so many guys shuffling in and out of the lineup. And so I think that what the Raiders need to do is continue to stockpile the cupboard, you know, continue to go ahead and draft and develop these guys and have them waiting in the wings. You know, who's going to be the next Trent Brown? Because I don't think, and I'll just tell you straight up, I don't think Trent Brown's around next year, you know, and I get everyone's argument about, but he's so good when he's in there. But look, the last 2 years, how long has he been in there? Exactly. You know what I mean? He does no good on the sideline, and that's not a dig at him. It's just the honest to God truth. You know, so you've got to find someone who's more consistent. You know, I'd be surprised if Richie Incognito comes back next year. Rodney Hudson, we all know he's a solid at that center position. I think John Simpson's going to have a lot of work to do in the offseason to kind of prepare himself. I think he's going to be needed a lot. That was the former fourth round pick from Clemson just this past draft. I think that the Raiders need to continue to go in. Make sure that they get those guys ready. You know, is Denzel Good going to be a guy that you bring back? Is he going to be a guy that you, you know, kind of lock in a certain position? But you've got to go. And this is where, when I criticize, and I say criticize kind of like tongue in cheek, because I didn't really criticize. I just said that, you know, I felt like the past draft, the 2020 draft, should have, you know, got a little bit more out of it. And Mike Mayock and company could have got a little bit more out of it instead of, you know, wasting a third round pick on a Lynn Bowden Jr. or even a Tanner Muse. Like you said, they could have went and got, you know, some more depth on the offensive line, especially if they weren't going to play that much. And I know that they had no idea that Lynn Bowden wasn't going to work out. But, I mean, that was basically giving a third-round pick away. They had 3 third-round picks, and Mike Mayock said that's like stealing. Yeah. Well, what did you steal? You didn't steal anything. It's like he went to Costco and stole a sample. Samples are free. You know what I mean? Like, hey, what are you eating? What are you eating? You know what I'm saying? Like, hey, what are you eating? Oh, I'm eating. I got this little piece of food from over there, but don't tell anybody because I didn't pay for it. No, son, those are samples. They're free. You know what I mean? So he didn't steal anything. So that's why, you know, when I brought that up earlier in the season and people got on me tough, like, oh, well, how are you going to know what these guys are? Tanner Muse did nothing, and Lynn Bowden Jr. is not even on the same team. You know what I mean? And
yeah,
Brian Edwards.
Third round picks.
Right, exactly. Right. Brian Edwards, maybe he's going to turn into something. I like what I saw from him the final game of the season, but that was the final game of the season. So, yeah, I just think that this draft that they have, they really need to hit on multiple guys, and they need to stock that shelf for everything you said about that offensive line.
Yeah, and that's why I'm concerned with it, because, you know, like a Denzel Good, good player, and I have no problem with the Raiders re-signing him, but I just have a problem seeing him as a frontline starter. I think he's a rotational guy, a guy you need for depth. I think he's a great depth guy, in fact. But I start to think about the age up front, and I start to look at what's going on there. Yeah, and if Richie Incognito can't come back, then you got a need there. And so for the offensive linemen, to me, I look at the free agent class, not a ton of guys out there. So that means you got to go draft. So then now I think that puts pressure on Mayock and Gruden to make choices on the defense that are more free agent related or trade possibilities, because if they have to, you know, looking at who's available in the draft, there's no defensive tackles. There's only one really in the top 50 for the Raiders if they're looking at defensive tackles. So there you go. You take that one off. And then you have mock drafts all over the place now saying the Raiders are going to take a wide receiver. If that happens, I'll die. I just don't.
Hey, dog, I'll tell you right now, man. I don't mean to cut you off. I'll tell you right now, I would not be surprised or shocked, though, if I saw John Gruden pull the trigger on especially like a Jalen Waddle, or Devontae Waddle. Smith won't be there, but I could totally see him going after a Jalen Waddle who might drop a little bit in the draft. I could absolutely, and if he was available there at 17, I could totally see John Gruden making that move. I know nobody likes it, but I could totally see that. Because at some point, they may say, you know what? He might look at it and say, you know what? Our defense stinks. I'm not guaranteed it's going to be better. So I'm just going to try to outshoot everybody. You never know.
That's a great point. That's a great point. I mean, you're right. Nothing surprises me with this Raiders team, especially the last, I mean, I've covered live on the air the last two drafts for the Raiders, and I was surprised every time, right? So it was, it wouldn't surprise me, but I would just be like, wow. I mean, I think there would be a collective scream from Raider Nation knowing that defense, depending who's available, right? I mean, if there's some guys there that aren't real huge benefit to the Raiders as far as what their needs are, then I can see that, but we'll see how that all goes down. But it'll be interesting, man. It's just there's so many little question marks here. Luckily, the offense is doing pretty well. And we'll talk a little bit more about the offense later. We're up against our first break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Evan Grote from Just Pod Baby. We'll talk to him about some of this stuff. You're with Q. You're with Scott here on Silver and Black Today, only on Raider Nation Radio.
Store for details.
From Stabler to Plunkett and Allen to Jacobs, we've got your Raiders covered on Silver and Black Today. Here are your hosts, Scott Gulbranson and Q Myers.
Welcome back on this Thursday to Silver and Black Today here, powered by our good friends Sam and Ash, injury attorneys. Call them anytime, 702-820-1234, because you deserve what's right. Make sure you call in too. It's your time. I will talk to you. Discussion Q and I had in the first segment there, wide ranging offensive line to a lot of other things related to the Raiders and their offseason coming up, including the defensive coordinator, the fact that Gus Bradley is sort of the leading candidate from everything that we have. You can check out our story today up on silverandblacktoday.com concerning that, getting to know Gus Bradley, more details there if you don't know a lot about him. But the number to get involved to call is 702-365-9200. That is the Raider Nation Radio Listener Hotline. That is for you only. You call, we'll make you part of the show. We will put you on there. You can also text us at 69187. That is the Sam and Ash text line. Put the letters R and R, then your message, and then your name, so we know your name. We can read it out over the air, and I'll share your question or comment right here on Raider Nation Radio. So thanks for being back with us. Q will be back with us at 3:20 for the Q-tip and some other discussions around the Raiders. But now what we're going to do is, I don't know, it's that time of the year. Yes, the onslaught, it is January. It's January 7th. From now until April, you will be inundated, including from us sometimes. We try not to do it too much, with mock drafts, okay? And so they're out there. And one today caught my eye on ESPN.com, Todd McShay. But first, before I talk about that, I'm going to bring in my partner in crime here for this segment, and that is the host of the very popular Just Pod Baby podcast, a member of our team here at the Silver and Black Today Media Group. That is one, Mr. Evan Grote. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. You missed one this week. You'll get a good review of the game on Sunday against the Broncos. The Raiders, of course, winning their final game to go 8-8. That was done with co-host Mo Moten, who's also on staff here with Silver and Black Today. But Evan now joins us from Western New York. And Evan, you ready for this first mock draft? Wait till you read the name who they have the Raiders taking at 17. Have you seen this yet?
I did see it, and I put my comments out there on social media about it. I don't think Todd McShay has spent a whole lot of time watching the Raiders play this season with that pick.
No, but Q mentioned it earlier, because I mentioned it earlier in the show, but at number 17, if you guys haven't seen it up on ESPN.com, and it's part of the ESPN Plus, you have to have a subscription to read this particular story, but at number 17, McShay has the Raiders taking wide receiver Jaylen Waddle. So another Alabama wide receiver high in the first round, and he talks about the need for more playmakers on offense. I think you can never have too many playmakers on offense, Evan, but with the needs that the Raiders have at defense and with some of the players even on his board at that time, it doesn't make a lot of sense for them to do it. I just don't see that happening. But then as Q said earlier, I don't know if you caught it, but Q said it wouldn't surprise him either with John Gruden taking another wide receiver at the top of the draft.
Yeah, I heard your conversation with Q, and I guess I wouldn't be too surprised by it either, but I think the way Gruden has spoke about this team in recent weeks, he fully understands that in order for this team to take the next step and get to the playoffs, they got to fix that defense. So I still don't believe that even if a guy like Jalen Waddle is available, I can't imagine that'll be the pick. They got to look to address the defense, and I think that's what they'll do.
The only wild card there to me, Evan, is if something happens above them that is different, or people trade up and they take a bunch of players that that the Raiders have their eyes set on, and there's nobody from the defense, from an athlete perspective, that is in their mind worthy of a first round pick. See, that's the only thing. I think there's plenty of guys there, especially when you expand it out to cornerback. There's not a lot of safeties, there's not a lot of defensive tackles. But even in the way he has it laid out, he has one of the only good defensive tackles in the draft, Davion Nixon from Iowa, going 22nd to the Jaguars because of their trade with the Rams. That's a guy I would take before I would take a wide receiver. Although if you have a guy like Waddle there, it's got to be tempting. I get that. So maybe you trade down. I could see the Raiders trading down if some guys are available. But it'll be interesting. We're just getting that all started. We got lots of time to talk about it. But what I wanted to do today with you, Evan, and you and Mo did such a great job on the podcast, on the Just Pod Baby podcast this week, earlier this week, talking about the 2020 season. But I wanted to ask you specifically, when you look at the 2020 season, it's very easy to talk about the disappointment. It's very easy to say, hey, they didn't make the playoffs again. 8-8. Okay, it wasn't a losing record, but it wasn't a winning record. When you look at the 2020 season, what is the biggest positive you will take away from that season?
Well, I think you have to look at the offensive side of the ball, especially where this team was last year. One of the bottom teams in the league as far as points per game was concerned. So I think they took a big step forward on the offensive side of the ball. They brought in some playmakers for Carr. That was one of the big complaints from fans, is that Carr doesn't have enough weapons. They did address that. And although some of these younger guys weren't as involved as I would have liked, they did bring in some guys. Nelson Agholor was a big boost to the offense. And I think that another one of the positives are some of the individual improvements we saw on offense. Derek Carr obviously has to be mentioned in that. One of his better years of his career, if not the best year of his career. And I heard you talking about Colton Miller and some of the struggles that you think he had in the run game. I still think he has progressed really nicely so far in his young career. And keep in mind, this was a pick that, I'll admit, I was kind of scratching my head a little bit when the pick was made. A lot of people wanted Derwin James to be the pick. Look at where those two players are at this point in the career. When Derwin James has been healthy, he's been very good, don't get me wrong. But Colton Miller, he's been reliable. He's always out there, and he's a guy that you can count on week in and week out.
Yeah, not only that, in his rookie year, he played injured. I mean, that was it hampered him in his development that first year, why he struggled. But the guy played through an injury, and as Q said earlier in the show, you have to have availability. It's the biggest asset you have as a player. Yeah, you got to be a good player on the field and execute what you need to do, but at the same time, you have to be able to play. Colton Miller has proven time and time again, even when hurt, he'll go as long as he's not hurt so bad that he can't play. So I agree with you on that one.
I'm sorry to interrupt
you,
Scott. And look at what the situation they have with Trent Brown, who is a better player than Colton Miller, but they can't get him on the field. So You see how important it is to have guys who are willing to play through injuries. And I'm not saying Trent Brown's not, but a guy who is consistently out there on the field. It's a big factor. Availability is so important.
It is. Evan Grote, host of the Just Pod Baby podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at egroat5, G-R-O-A-T. E-G-R-O-A-T-5. And Evan, you mentioned Derek Carr, and I want to visit on that for a second, because to me, you know, I saw him do a lot of the things that we talked about with you on this show, Q and I, and you talked about on the show, related to what we wanted to see back in August of Derek Carr coming into the season. That was using his legs more to extend plays, to create more, to run more when he needed to. He especially did that in the first half of the season. Is there much more Derek Carr could have done this year, or what more improvement would you like to see?
I was very pleased with I've always been very critical of Carr about using the legs, as you mentioned, and I think he did an excellent job in improving in that part of the game. I hope he continues to get a little bit better. I don't think he's near, he's definitely has room to grow in that area. Some of the best quarterbacks in the league are guys who can extend plays and make plays when the pocket breaks down. So I do want to see him get better there. One of the things I need to see him get better at is protecting the ball. Now, he threw 9 interceptions this year, which isn't terrible. 9 interceptions isn't terrible, but the 8 fumbles lost, that's concerning. That he has the most fumbles lost since he's entered the league of any quarterback. So 17 turnovers as a whole is concerning. So I want to see him get better with protecting the ball, you know, inside the pocket and just kind of feeling that pressure that comes. So again, it's something that I don't think you can be taught really. It's just an instinctual thing that you have to have. So I would like to see him try to get a little bit better in that area.
Yeah, I thought he did better there too, because I thought last year there was so many times where he didn't feel the pressure and he ended up taking a sack. And towards the end of this year, I think it started to increase a little more, maybe just because of the injury or whatever towards the last few weeks of the season. But I thought he improved greatly there. He just felt in the pocket more. And that was despite not having his entire offensive line for a lot of the season. It was tough, but he somehow improved there. But I think that was a lot of the work in the offseason that he did. So that was good to see. All right. So now we switch to what's going on now, Evan. And of course, the big thing out there now is not Deshaun Watson. Please, folks, I'm telling you, and I'm not mocking anybody, you can have your own opinion, but Deshaun Watson will not be ready. Deshaun Watson will not be traded, okay? If he's traded, you can take this recording, and I will eat a hat. I will literally eat a hat of whatever team he gets traded to if he gets traded. So I just want to put that on the record.
I saw that story get tweeted out. I can't remember who it was, but it's almost like it's purposely out there just to taunt Raider fans. They dangled it out there targeting Raider fans because they knew they would take that bait.
Well, and I see some discussion around it, Evan, and I have no problem with discussion. I mean, wild pie in the sky stuff, there's nothing wrong with that. That's what fans do, and it's cool. But I will tell you this, I've seen the conversation in Raider Nation move around, well, you know, Mayock has always said, if he can improve at any position, doesn't matter what it is, he will. That's absolutely true, but people are using that, I think, out of context, because when you look at this team, look at Deshaun Watson himself on the Houston Texans. Deshaun Watson plays well. Their offense was not great, but it was good, okay? Their defense was terrible. And what happened to them? Did they win? No. So you want Deshaun Watson to come to the Raiders? The Raiders have to give up all that draft capital and probably players, and you have no defense still? You're going to lose. So would you you can have a quarterback a few more years because he's younger than Derek Carr. But to me, in my view, the Raiders need to be focused on the defense. Doesn't mean you can't improve. They might need to improve at wide receiver, depending what happens with Nelson Aguilar. And if you can get ready, as Q and I have talked about so many times, develop a young quarterback, maybe in more in the mode of one of those players like Marcus Mariota or like Deshaun Watson. But right now, I wouldn't be worried about quarterback. I would be worried about pretty much everything else. And as I mentioned in the first segment today, Evan, that offensive line might need some help. If you let Trent Brown go, do you sign Denzel Good? Yeah, maybe. Okay, but is Denzel Good a frontline starter? I don't know. I think he's a really good depth guy, but I think the Raiders have other issues that have to take priority. And to me, quarterback is last.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm going to be honest. Would I rather have Deshaun Watson at quarterback? Of course. I mean, he's dynamic. He's one of the elite quarterbacks in the league, I think. But I think you can accomplish the same goals with Derek Carr if you just upgrade the defense. I think Derek Carr can take you to the playoffs, but he does need a better defense around him. So they got to address it. They got to hammer it in free agency, and they got to hammer it in the draft, and they got to nail the picks. That's the bottom line. And then you got to bring in a defensive coordinator that who can develop these players and mesh them all together as a force.
Evan Grote, host of the Just Pod Baby Raiders podcast, is with us. You can subscribe to the podcast wherever you get it. And speaking of the defensive coordinator, we mentioned, as reported around the country in various media outlets, but also up on silverandblacktoday.com, our own Noah Strang has a story today about getting to know what appears to be the front runner, and that is Gus Bradley, who just and is still currently under contract with the Chargers as their defensive coordinator. Has a history, of course, with the Legion of Boom in Seattle, worked for John Gruden in his first pro job back with the Buccaneers along with Monty Kiffin. So you look at Gus Bradley, what's your initial reaction? If he were to be the guy, how would you feel?
Well, you know, I've told you guys on the show here, I'm a Wade Phillips guy. I think that that mm-hmm. ship has sailed based on Gruden's comments about wanting to stay with a four-man front. Gus Bradley doesn't really excite me that much. You know, he had a lot of talent when he was with Seattle, and I think that has a lot to do with it. He was not very successful as a head coach in Jacksonville, and I know that's a tough spot to be put into, and there's not too many guys that have been successful with the Jaguars. And then, you know, he's gone to the Chargers, and he's been kind of middle of the road to me, and I think he's had some talent over there with to work with, and it hasn't really taken that defense to where I think maybe it could have been. Yes, a lot of injuries and whatnot, but I think this goes back to Gruden just being with his buddies, working with the guys that he's comfortable with. And I heard what you and Q spoke about yesterday, and that's generally how the world works, that you mm-hmm. you hire people and you feel comfortable working with people that you have a past with. But that, to me, doesn't always mean that you're bringing in the best person for the job. It just means you're bringing in the person that you're most comfortable with. So I don't know if that's the best strategy. I would really rather see Gruden go just a completely different route and bring in someone who just has a track record of a lot of success in the league. And I will continue to say that's Wade Phillips for me.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that doesn't appear to even be a conversation, because I like that as well. But you're right. It is not necessarily a progressive pick from the perspective of my question going in the offseason, Evan. One of my big questions was, what will John Gruden do when he looks in the mirror? Will he look in the mirror and say, nah, I'm going to keep doing what I know how to do, and I'm going to keep doing it how I do it? Or is he going to say, you know what, I'm going to sit back, I'm going to look at how I do things, I'm going to look at the people I bring in. Maybe I need to bring in somebody to push me, somebody who's got a little autonomy and can kind of give me the business if I need a little bit and be able to stand on their own as a personality and as a coach. And I don't know that that's going to happen. I'm not saying it should. I'm not saying it shouldn't. I'm just saying it all comes back to John Gruden, who is in control of the franchise. I don't care what anybody says when it comes to the football stuff. And that's no disrespect to Mike Mayock, because I think he's there and helps out significantly and is there with player personnel issues because he's so good at it. But at the same time, I just think that it all comes down to John Gruden, like you said. And when you look at that situation with the defensive coordinator, I said it yesterday too, Evan. I look, 50%, if that, of Raider Nation will be happy with the hire. The other 50 or 60%, or depending who it is, 70%, are going to complain about it until the coach can get on the field with the players, until this team can add more talent on defense and the fans can see it on the field in the way of wins. Nobody's going to be really happy.
Correct. I'm sorry. I was
that's okay. Sidetracked. That's okay.
I agree. This is the way I feel about it too. I think all of the candidates that I'm seeing are guys that I would feel more confident about than Paul Gunther. And that's not a knock on Gunther, but we clearly saw that. And we've heard now since he's not been with the Raiders is that he was just asking these players to do things that maybe they weren't capable of and putting too much on their plate. So it didn't sound like he was a very good teacher as well. So, I would be more satisfied with Gus Bradley over Paul Gunther. So I guess if you look at it from that perspective, it is an upgrade.
Yeah, and we're about to take a break. Evan, can you stay with us till the top of the hour?
Sure can.
Okay. All right, get on. What do you guys think? I want to hear what Raider Nation has to say about the possibility of Gus Bradley, who appears right now to be the leading candidate for this defensive coordinator. Tell us what you guys think. 702-365-9200. Get on the phone. You can talk with Evan and I here on Silver and Black today. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll roll on with the conversation around your Raiders, and we'll take your calls at 702-365-9200. You're listening to Silver and Black today on Raider Nation Radio.
If you believe Tom Brady did fumble and that Franco Harris didn't catch that pass and call it the Immaculate Deception, then you found the right place. This is Silver and Black today on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
We are back here. Scott Branson, joined by my good friend Evan Grote. He is the host of the Just Pod Baby podcast. He joins us here on Thursdays as well. We're talking everything Raiders, and we have some phone calls on the line. We have about 10 minutes till the top of the hour. So, Evan, let's go to the phones, my man. What do you think?
Let's do it. Let's hear what they have to say.
All right. We're going out to our good friend Steven in New Orleans. Steven, you're on with Evan and Scott here on Silver and Black today.
Well, good afternoon, Evan and Scott. Happy New Year. I haven't spoken to you guys since the holiday. I hope everything's working out well for us all so far in the new year.
Yeah, we were a little worried about you, man. We hadn't heard from you in a while, so I'm glad you reached out, and I'm glad you're able to get through today.
Well, the good news for me is I own a restaurant. We're extremely busy around the Christmas and New Year holiday. And
it
seemed like every time I tried to call you, I was too busy or y'all were too busy, but it's all good. I listen to the podcast every day, so I'm not far away, but I may not be able always get on the phone depending on what's going on. But, you know, on a lighter note, and you can inform Evan about this later, the way they played that last game, maybe they hired that consultant I was interested in.
Maybe.
You can explain that later.
Okay, but, I will.
I was thinking about the whole defensive coordinator part of it, and I thought I read somewhere that Gus Bradley's had like a top 10 defense the past 5 years. But as far as I'm concerned, it's all about the talent. Because look at Jack Del Rio, now looks like the greatest defensive coordinator. Well, he's got the talent in Washington. So I don't care who you bring in to coach, except for one thing I heard John say in a season-ending press conference. It made it sound to me like his biggest problem with Paul is he wasn't collaborating with his defensive assistants.
Mm-hmm.
He made a point about the new defensive coordinator needing to really be able to use the talents of his assistant coaches.
Mm-hmm.
And did anybody else hear that, or am I the only one that thought I heard that?
No, Stephen, you're right, and we talked about it here on the show, and I think that that's one of the issues at why you see him insisting, it appears, he's going to insist that Rod Marinelli stay and coach the defensive line. So that tells me that Marinelli and other coaches probably were once Gunther was gone, kind of fessed up and said, hey, listen, you know, we tried to do this, we tried to do that, and Gunther wasn't having it. And we don't know that. I'm just guessing based on what you are, which is the statement he made. But I think that is true. And Evan, you've talked about that too, man, which is you need somebody who can coach, you need somebody who can teach because you have young players on that defense, but you also need the talent to get the job done.
Yeah, I actually was a strong supporter of Gunther for the past three seasons, and I always pointed the finger towards the fact that I didn't think he had enough personnel. But again, after we've heard some of the players talk about Corey Littleton talking about he felt like he was a chicken with his head cut off running around, it leads me to believe that there wasn't enough teaching going on, and that's never a good thing.
Yeah. Steven, man, thanks for the call. I appreciate it, man. We'll talk to you real soon. All right, Steven's gone. All right, it's now time to move out. We're coming back to the Las Vegas Valley. We're going out to Henderson, and Brian is on the line. Brian, you're on with Scott and Evan here on Silver and Black today.
Hey, good afternoon, fellas.
Hey, Brian.
First, Scott, please, you've got to get Evan and Mo here to Vegas. They need their own show. I'm serious. They really,
please,
really do.
Please do get me out there to Vegas. I don't know if my wife would like that.
Brian, he tried to get here. He had tickets. He was coming in for the Bills game, and then, of course, COVID, right? COVID, the bastard COVID.
That's right.
Yeah, you know, I'm a friend of Q's as well, and, you know, I know he's trying to get here as well. That would be great to have everybody here.
That's right. We're going to take over the city, brother.
Evan and Scott, I'd like to talk to you guys about first of all, the whole Gruden situation. It's frustrating because we all want Wade Phillips here. You know, what majority of us do. But he's so stubborn and he won't pull the trigger. The evidence is there. You know, he was specifically talking to Wade Phillips in that press conference. We all know that. So it's like, but then also, too, like with the linebacker situation, I don't really know. We loaded up on linebacker, but they really didn't do anything. If you really think about it, Nicholas Morrow was probably one of our best linebackers, and he's undrafted.
No doubt.
You know, so, okay, but then we've got White from UNLV. We also have Tanner Muse. You know, but you've got to let these guys play, but are they really a linebacker or are they safety? We need help at both positions.
Yeah, so, and Brian, I think you know what you're hitting on here is important, and that is you have to be able to get out. And I understand what you're saying about Wade Phillips because I think, you know, a lot of us too in the media were thinking, wow, this would be such a great idea, but we're not in control. And yeah, you know, when Gruden came back and was given the reins to the franchise when it comes to the football operation side of things, that was the trade-off, right? So you're giving him the free reign to do what he thinks. That's what Mark Davis did. And as fans, we see it from one way. There might be other reasonings why he doesn't want to. Maybe he doesn't have an affinity for Wade Phillips. Maybe he thinks there's a different answer to the question. But I understand, because as fans and as radio hosts, and Evan said it too, we think it would be great because he has such a great track record of turning around defenses very quickly. And for those of us who think the Raiders have probably a 3 to 5 year period here with this offense and its youth and the defense too, with some of the talent in his youth, it does. And then as far as the linebacker goes, yeah, Javon White's a good player. He's an undrafted free agent. That hybrid safety linebacker, Evan, is something that we're seeing more in the NFL and frankly in college where it started. And I think we're going to see more of that. So you might see them go draft another player like that. And I'm on the record, I'm just not a believer in Tanner Muse being anything other than a special teams player.
No, absolutely. Yeah, I'm just not a big believer in him as well. I think that was a bad pick by Mayock and Gruden, and I'm not expecting much from him, anything outside of special teams. But I do want to make a couple comments going back to the Gruden comments about wanting to stay in that 4-3 front versus bringing in Wade Phillips, who likes to run the 3-4. I do think part of that logic is that they've invested, you know, three drafts now since Gruden's been back, based on drafting players along the defensive line who fit maybe more in a 4-3, and you know, maybe thinking he's not ready to give up on some of those guys. I think some of them are versatile enough where they could make it work in a 3-4, but that might be part of the logic. He feels like if he gives up on the 4-3, he might be giving up on some of those young players as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
But one more question for you guys, Evan.
Yeah, sure, Brian. Scott,
they've been running a 4-3 forever. I've been watching the Raiders for 47 years, but they've been running that same 4-3 forever. So I don't know if that's a Al Davis thing or what, but that's what they've always ran.
Well, and yeah, Brian, thanks for the call, man. We appreciate you as always. I think part of it, to Evan's point, you have talent that you've drafted on that. And so if you were in a different position, and I know it sounds like as bad as this defense was, you'd think they would be ready for a complete overhaul, but they don't. I don't think they believe that. I think they like Max Crosby. They like Cleland Furl, and some of the other guys I'm not so sure about, but they like what they have at linebacker, at least to Corey Littleton, who just didn't perform, and he was very honest about that. And then on the back end, you're just really, really young, inexperience, and they need coaching. So if this was a different situation, if this was Houston, for example, I'll use them, Evan. If this was Houston where you got to get rid of, you need everything, then it's easier to make a scheme change to go to 3-4, because then you can start building through the draft and picking guys that fit that. But by the way, there's just not nose tackles like there used to be either. It's much more of a finesse game. Even the big guys up front in college at defensive tackle, they're not your stereotypical nose tackle. So the 3-4, well, I'm not saying it can't work in certain situations, it's just not something that you see as much anymore. So, Brian, thanks for the call. We'll get one more call in here before the top of the hour. It's Raider 27. Raider 27, you're on Silver and Black today here with Scott and Evan.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, buddy.
Chilling.
I've been listening to the conversations about the defensive coordinator. I think everybody's talking about that.
Yeah.
You know, it looks like it's going to be Gus Bradley, but my only problem with him is when he was a really good defensive coordinator, he was working under Pete Carroll.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how much influence Pete Carroll had on that defense and how much Gus Bradley had. He hasn't really had a great defense since he left Seattle. And it's amazing how much talent the Chargers had. And it just seemed like their defense underperformed all the time. I mean, I don't know. It just seemed like I just can't put my finger on it. I thought I would like to see a younger coach that was one of the budding rising stars.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe the players, we have so many young players, they might relate better to a younger coach. And that guy might be a little bit more able to defense these college offenses that are coming out into the league so much. But
yeah,
you just don't have the information. You don't know what they know. You know what I mean?
Right. No, you're right, and that's where as fans we can say anything we want, as radio hosts we can say anything we want, but we don't have all the details. And I think you bring up your point about Gus Bradley and having talent, and that maybe it was Pete Carroll. But you know, you can say, hey, look, who's the hottest coaching candidate in the league right now? It's Eric Bieniemy, who worked for Andy Reid. So is it Andy Reid or is it Eric Bieniemy? I think that conversation you can have with any up and coming coach, because they're usually going to be on a winning team. They're usually going to be playing for a coach that is well known and very successful. So it's hard to kind of separate the two. I understand what you're saying there, but I do think, you know, the Charger defense in particular, since that's most frequent or most recent, is that defense. I think the one criticism I would have of Gus Bradley in that situation, the question I would have is with Joey Bosa and these guys on the line, they have not racked up sacks. That's my big concern. The other stuff on the defense for the Chargers over the past few years, they've been decimated by injury every single year. So I'm not sure exactly. I think it bodes to Evan's point earlier about having talent and making sure you have it. But Raider 27, man, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. And call in again next time. We'll get you right on there. So thanks for that. We do have one caller, Rich in Oakland. Hang on, Rich. We're going to get to you right after the top of the hour break. We say goodbye now to Evan. Evan, you got another podcast coming out tonight?
Actually, I'm taking this week off.
All right.
So I encourage everyone
back to once a week, right?
Yeah, we're going back to once a week now that we're in the off season. So I'll be back with a brand new episode next week on Thursday. But I encourage everyone to go out there and listen to the this episode we put out this week on Monday, the final recap episode. There's a lot of good off season talk in that episode as well for you.
There is. Evan, along with his special co-host Mo Moten, who's on the show here tomorrow. One of your best, I think, top three of the season for sure. Good stuff. So do that. Evan, thanks for being with us, man. We will talk to you here next week.
Yep. Anytime, guys. Thank you.
All right. That was Evan Grote, Just Pod Baby. Go subscribe to that podcast. Rich in Oakland, stay there. I will get to you after the break. We're going to take that top of the hour break. When we come back, we'll get Richard in Oakland, and then we will be joined by Levi Edwards, a digital reporter over at Raiders.com. We talked about some honors that the Raiders pulled in this week from the AFC, and we'll talk to him about Henry Ruggs and Bryan Edwards and their finished strong in Denver on Sunday. You're listening to Silver and Black Today here on Raider Nation Radio.